Nelson, we have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast.
Welcome
to Utopia.
Hey everybody, welcome in. It is a Wednesday mailbag edition of the Utopia Football Podcast. Sincere apologies for the mailbag not being out on Tuesday this week. I had a charity event yesterday. It was a golf tournament. It was the Texas Bowl golf tournament. My team finished in fourth place. It had very little to do with my performance, but I was very proud of my squad. It was myself, my boss, Parker Hillis, my boss's boss, Sarah Frazier, and the other person that she's the boss of, her husband, Patrick, who I think listens to the podcast. So he will take that ribbing in very good spirits, I'm sure. So it was the four of us, and we had two gridiron legends added to our group, Eric Metcalf, Longhorn legend, and Dennis Gentry, Tecmo Bowl legend from the 85 Bears. I told him that when I met him. He introduced himself. I said, "You're Dennis Gentry? I use you as my kick returner in Tecmo Bowl all the time. Drunk on my couch in college all the time." Google him, Dennis Gentry, Tecmo Bowl. He was a legend on Tecmo Bowl. And in real life, he was on the 85 Bears, the Super Bowl Shuffle Bears, the William the Refrigerator Perry Bears. So anyways, I say all that to say that's why we're a day late on the mailbag. So we got a lot of questions. I got a bunch of questions. I put the question list together by Monday. And then just on a whim, I'm like, I should see how many people maybe sent emails on Tuesday. Boom, a whole bunch more. So if your question didn't get in, my apologies. The mailbag is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So we're getting a little bit more selective with the questions, but it makes for a better overall content product. So I'm going to get right into the podcast before I get to a few administrative or the mailbag Before I get into the mailbag, a few administrative items. The first one is this one right here at the bottom of the screen. Hit the subscribe button if you could for the podcast. Subscribe to it. You'll get it automatically. Our team is 5-1. What better time to just consume content after content after content? There's a lot of good Texan stuff out there. I appreciate you making the Utopia podcast part of your weekly Texans routine. So become even more routine. Hit subscribe. Hit us with a rating. Hit us with a review. All of it is good. Even if you got issues, you can rate and review. It's all good. So do that. Again, a quick reminder, we're about to do the mailbag. If you have a question about the Texans you want to send in, houmailbag@gmail.com. The other administrative items I would say are, number one, listen to Pain and Pendergast 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. weekdays. Particularly today's episode of Pain and Pendergast, because we had a 45-minute conversation with Texans GM Nick Caserio. He was excellent, talking about a lot of the aspects of this team, how they've been playing so far, had some really good thoughts on Stephon Diggs and Will Anderson. Even a couple of mailbag questions that I didn't see until after the Caserio interview, I ended up working them into the interview. Just happened to fall that way. So if you send in questions that you thought would be good for Caserio, there's a decent chance they got asked today. So download and subscribe to the Pain and Pendergast podcast as well. But particularly today, really good conversation with Nick Caserio about the Texans. We hit for about 5 or 10 minutes his career too. He's got a really interesting career path that I think can be very inspirational to people, not just people trying to get into football, but a really good story. So seek that out. Go out of your way to listen to that. Really appreciate it. And I would expect that any moment now we're going to be hearing that this is purely a prediction on my part. This is not me breaking news. And there it is. Will Anderson named AFC Defensive Player of the Week. Boom. Right there. Big, least shocking player of the week that the Texans have won so far. Will Anderson was dynamite in the game on Sunday. Practically literal dynamite. He almost imploded Drake May's physical being, because he was so violent in a good way. So Will Anderson, AFC Defensive Player of the Week. Big congrats to Will, who we love. I think that's the first time that he has won that honor. So good on him. And first of many. J.J. Watt still leads the franchise with 7. So, Will, you got at least 6 more to go to catch the GOAT. But good job by Will Anderson. All right, without further ado, let's get into the mailbag, shall we? HOUmailbag@gmail.com. We leave that at the bottom in case I say things that make you want to email me. So let's start out with Brian in Iowa. Says, what expectations do you have for Danico Autry? How do you see him fitting into the rotation that's doing so well? Well, we know that Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson are going to be on the edges for 80 to 90% of the snaps. We know that already. So how does Danico Autry fit in? I wouldn't be surprised if maybe they dialed back a little bit on how much Will and Danielle are getting on the field in just conventional base defense a little bit, just to load manage slightly. Maybe more Danielle than Will just based on age, but Will's had that ankle issue from time to time. So I think he'll fit into the rotation there. Like, I think he'll, whatever snaps like Jerry Hughes was getting before, Danico Autry's definitely getting those. And then I think on third down, I think, especially now with Mario Edwards out, I think Danico Autry bumps inside and he gives you a really, really violent option on the interior as well. It sounds like he's in game shape and ready to go. We asked Nick Caserio about Danico Autry today. It sounds like he's ready to go. It would shock me if he didn't play on Sunday against Green Bay, and it would mildly surprise me if he didn't play well against Green Bay. He's got fresh legs right now. So I think that's how he fits in, Brian. I think probably rotational guy on defensive end, you know, sort of the kind of what the mirroring of Derek Barnett. He's probably like Jerry Hughes was paired up with Derek Barnett when they were out there together, that you probably see Danico Autry and Derek Barnett. Man, that is a pretty nice set of backup defensive ends, too, for those two. And then I think on third down passing situations, you see Danico Autry out there with Will and Danielle, and they unleash hell on the other team. France in the North is in early today. With Henry Toa going to concussion protocol at the end of the game and Azeez Alshire getting hurt during the game, what's your level of concern? 1 to 10 for the linebacker position. D'Amico meets with the media today. We should learn more about both today because there'll be an injury report. So D'Amico Ryans has nowhere to run and hide with his, we'll just take it day to day. We'll at least know if these guys are practicing. I think that'll be the big key. So by the time you're listening to this, we might have news on that already. I know Aaron Wilson has already tweeted out some news that the expectation is Jimmy Ward and Kamari Lassiter are both going to be down again this weekend. So you're down in the secondary again. This would really hurt now if you were out even one of these two guys, let alone both of them. Christian Harris is nowhere near coming back, it seems like. So my concern level is at about a 9 for the linebacker position. They don't have a lot of depth there. We love Neville Hewitt, but he ain't Azeez Alshire. We love Jake Hansen. He ain't Henry Toa Toa. So my concern level is big, especially considering how many weapons, capable weapons, the Packers have to work the middle of the field. High concern, France in the North. Does Damian Pierce's TD run give you some confidence in him again? Some, not all, but some. It was good to see. Really like the cut up somebody did comparing Damian's touchdown run in the Patriots game to his touchdown run against the Chargers during his rookie year. If you can find that, go out of your way to do so. Your thought on Steven Sims' returns? It was fine. He had one good one. He was fine. He bobbled the ball on another one, I thought. I think they can do better in the return game, but Steven Sims is fine for now. Appreciate the email, France in the North. Glad you made it home to Toronto safely. Joe Q is in. Joe Q says, you were rightfully excited about the Nico extension when it was announced. Let's play a quick stock price game. Assume Nico's contract was the equivalent of a $10 stock the day it was announced. IPOs are often priced at $10 per share. Then that price almost certainly went up quite a bit over the first four games, reaching a peak when he got that bomb against the Bills. This was a frothy time with you and others daring to put Nico's name in a sentence with Justin Jefferson's. Then he hits the, let me pause right there. I put his name in the sentence with Justin Jefferson in so much as Nico is a top five wide receiver. I didn't say he was Justin Jefferson. Now, he was having the best season of any wide receiver when he went down with an injury, which makes it reasonable to call him the best wide receiver in football for 2024. Now, if I had a choice between Nico Collins and Justin Jefferson, I think I'd actually take Nico at $24 million than Justin Jefferson at $35. I think. But then he hits IR. Now I'm continuing with Joe Q. Then he hits IR. This is back to the IPO comparison. And a lot of air presumably comes out of the stock. Question, from a $10 IPO, what was your peak Nico stock price and what is it today? I would say my peak Nico stock price, if it was $10, when he was on the regular, getting 100 yards per week, leading the league in receiving by over 100 yards against the next closest guy, I would say it was probably around like a $17.50. You know, you add in the fact that he was on track maybe to win Offensive Player of the Year, or at least be in that conversation, maybe pushing $17.50, $18, I would say. You know, the injury is always lurking. That's what's always going to depress his stock price. You know, he's not recession proof, right? We know he's going to miss a few games. Now, Joe Q is saying he'd be at 450 right now with Nico on IR. I disagree with that. It's definitely below 10, but not far below 10, because we know what peak Nico looks like. That doesn't go away. I think this trip to the IR was very, very precautionary. Very much so. I think Nico, it would, just based on reading the tea leaves and some of the answers to the questions about Nico Collins, including Nick Caserio today, Nico, which is Italian for Nick, I don't know. Nico, not Nick, Nico is eligible to come back week 10 against the Lions. I would bet he's back week 10 against the Lions. All right. Thank you, Joe Q. The reason I'm laughing is this next emailer is Ben in the South. All right, if it's France in the North, and how do we pronounce Ben in the South? Ben in the South. Ben in the South. All right. Really happy Texans were able to get a decisive win against the Pats before heading to Green Bay. I think Green Bay is a top-tier team. It will be a significant challenge. I agree. How important do you feel getting a dominant win under your belt before heading into a place like Lambeau is? Enjoy all your content. Keep up the grind. And oh, Ben, it is a grind, but I love it. I don't know how important it was to get a dominant win. I feel like it was more important for the fans for them to get a dominant win than it was for the Texans. I think the Texans and DeMeco Ryans and Nick Caserio are perfectly happy winning by 3 points. Nick said it today. If you win 3-2, that's a win. Now, that would be the most hideous fucking abomination of a football game ever, but he is right. I have a hard time arguing that it would be a win. I don't think it was that important to the players. I think it was more important to the fans, maybe more important to the people who have been kind of touting and backing the Texans this year. I'm glad their point differential is positive on the season now. That was just too weird to look at when they were 4-1 with a red point differential on the ESPN standings. So yeah, that's how I feel about that. Ryan Lynn, it is clear to me that Joe Mixon is the clear X factor on offense. That was a legit defense, and Mixon was a man amongst boys. Do you agree? I think Mixon is a huge X factor. He's just different when he runs the football. He makes average to mediocre blocking look decent. He makes average blocking look good. He makes good blocking look great. To the point where I wonder to myself, like, why did the Bengals ever let this guy go in the first place? I know why. He was making a not an exorbitant salary, but a decent salary. Sometimes guys kind of run their course. Joe Mixon, the Bengals games I'd watched over the last couple of years, including when the Texans played the Bengals last year, Mixon was really a non-factor in that game. I think he had like 45 yards rushing in that game. So when I sit here and go, boy, how could they let this guy go? I do need to remind myself that Mixon had looked fine, but not like this, not like he has in the two games he's played so far. Now, the big thing for Mixon, I think, will be how does he look after 2, 3, 5, 7 games in a row, like that kind of thing. I know that he missed most of training camp with a quad. I know that he's missed up until the Patriots game. He'd missed 3 weeks with an ankle injury. The one thing that those injuries allow you to do is you're not getting any hits to your body that time. There's no position in football that's got more of an odometer when it comes to body blows than running back. We know this, right? And Mixon is right around that age of decline for running backs. So while he's had to deal with a quad in training camp, which I think was probably maybe a little overblown, like the sense I get just from watching Mixon work out on the side fields is he looked good. So they may have just been trying to kind of manage him in training camp and not have him take a bunch of hits. Even though they're training camp hits, they're not real hits. And then the ankle injury, he goes out after week 2. He misses 3 weeks. What's it going to look like when Joe Mixon has had multiple weeks in a row where he's getting hit 15, 20, 25 times. Add in blocking on pass pro. Those are hits. The body doesn't know that you're blocking. The body doesn't know that you're blocking instead of carrying a football. So how will that look? You know, is he still the X factor? Because the two really good games he's had, not counting the Bears game, that's the game he got hurt in with the ankle, was the opener where he hadn't taken any hits in months and months and months, and then the game against the Patriots where he hadn't really taken any hits since the third quarter of that Bears game. You know, so how does it look when the hits begin to stack up and he's played multiple games in a row? I think it's something to keep an eye on. I'm confident he's going to be fine. He's been around the league for a while, and he is a beast. He is a big, big dude that can move. But that's probably my biggest concern. Dave in Round Rock, on the O-line last year, Tunsil and Mason played all or most of the games at their positions. Kenyon Green, Juice Scruggs, Titus Howard played basically zero games at the positions they're playing this year. This line, as constituted, has played six games total together. They seem to have done well in the penalty department against the Patriots. CJ seemed to have decent time to throw, and they had a few great run plays. Overall, could be somewhat better. Question, are we to be patient that this line will gel, or must we consider a trade or relatively high draft picks to shore it up? Offensive line, Seth and I actually talked about this for a little bit today on Payne and Pendergast. Offensive line is a really tough position to trade for a plug-and-play replacement in during the season. If you lose somebody and you need just somebody better than what you have on the bench, then by all means make a trade. I don't know that I'm making trades to swap out any of these guys. I think you're better served, and there's probably a better chance that you're going to hit your ceiling as a line to just let these guys play and gel together, to use your word, Dave. So I think the nature of offensive line, plus I think if you're going to be making trades, I do think there are areas of this team that need depth more than the offensive line, linebacker, secondary specifically, that need the depth. And I don't want to go trading away all of our draft picks to attempt to shore up everything. You do have to have an eye on the future. So I would not be making a trade for an offensive lineman with the idea that we're plugging them in. Now, if you're concerned about your depth on the offensive line, then if you want to send a day three pick to somebody to pick up a swing tackle or a swing interior guy, then cool. I think Blake Fisher's been fine when they've put him in there so far for Titus and Laramie. So I think they may be okay there. But that's the only trade I would make with the offensive line, is just for depth. I wouldn't do it with the idea that we're replacing Shaq Mason or Kenyon Green, you know, that kind of thing. And definitely not replacing Juice Scruggs. Center is a big one that I'm like, man, you got to have some chemistry with the quarterback. All right, Justin. Justin emails in. Thank you, Dave, for the email. Justin emails in. I love the podcast. I'm listening now to pretty much every episode. Born in 92. I grew up in Houston. My dad got season tickets the very first year, so I grew up going to all the games. I lived in Dallas the last 5 years. I was disconnected from the Texans, but found your podcast because I listened to 610. Well, thank you. Thanks for keeping me tied in and in the loop. I love the content and dialogue. This is my first time reaching out in the mailbag. Well, Justin, welcome into the mailbag. I appreciate that. My question, he says, is what are your thoughts on our cap space between now and when we have to re-sign Stroud? Man, you guys are all over these futures questions today. We obviously have a lot of young talent that's not eating up cap space. We got to figure out the contract for Diggs or sign another wide receiver. Justin lists all the shopping list items. I would say the caps, I haven't even looked, Justin, honestly, to what the cap space situation is. I know they've got enough to do stuff this year. I think they're still sitting on 18 to 20 million in cap space. I can't think of anything they've done that would eat it up. Like Nico's extension was not a major cap consumer. And they're not really long-term committed to anybody. So I think the cap stuff is fine. Where the cap is going to have to start to be something that gets super managed is when you pay Stingley, when you pay Will Anderson, and when you pay CJ Stroud. And then that's when you've got to start making decisions on some guys. Do you bring Stephon Diggs back? I feel silly even mentioning Tank Dell here, but I think they like Tank Dell a lot. I know he hasn't been great this year, but I think they like him a lot. Diggs isn't going to be here forever, you know, so, you know, and Tank's a few years down the road. That's probably not a great example, but the big ones are Stingley, Will, CJ Stroud. There'll be a few other younger players that they're going to want to re-sign that maybe aren't tippy top of their position, like those three guys, Like Jalen Petrie, for example, they love Jalen Petrie. So what's the number for Jalen Petrie? You know, they're paying Azeez Alshire $10 million a year. Those are like the longest contracts they have, or like the guys who are on 3-year deals right now. So I'm not too concerned about it, about the cap. Once you sign CJ, that's when you have to start to manage it. But I don't think there's anything that they can't do right now within reason because of cap reasons. All right. Appreciate it, Justin. Appreciate you being a future mailbag participant. My man, Middle Screen says, you live in an alternate universe where front office and head coach free agency is a thing. Oh, this is fun. You can only afford to keep one of Nick Caserio or D'Amico Ryans. Who do you choose to keep? Oh, that's a tough one. That's a tough one because you guys know how fond I am of Nick. I consider him a friend. And yet D'Amico Ryans, I think if you put both of them out there as free agents, because this is your question, Middle Screen, I think depending on the team, I think I could see a lot of teams choosing Nick based on what he's done here, and I could see a lot of teams choosing D'Amico. I think specific, so I'm answering specific for the Texans. I think there's a lot of teams that are headed towards the bottom of a rebuild that would take Nick Caserio over D'Amico Ryans. And nobody had a harder rebuild than Nick Caserio coming here. Oh, hey, you have no draft picks. You have no cap space. You've got a shit ton of really bad contracts. You have Jack Easterby in the building. And then once you get there, the quarterback demands a trade. And then 6 weeks later, the quarterback is getting sued by 24 women for being a pervert. So now I challenge any potential GM for another team to come up with a tougher rebuild than that one. And look at them now. I mean, they're a top six or seven team in the NFL, conservatively, the Texans. They're 5-1. So by record, they're one of the top four teams in the NFL right now. So I do think there's teams that if they were just like, they're at the very beginning of things, would take Nick. My answer for the Texans is it would be D'Amico. And it would be, I mean, we know D'Amico has the hyper connection to the city from when he's a player. I think D'Amico's an outstanding coach. And I think D'Amico's got the connection with C.J. Stroud that I think is going to be so very important over the next decade or so. So it would be D'Amico, while acknowledging that I think if you did it for the league, that Nick would get his fair share of people saying, we'll take that guy. We need to build this thing. We'll find a coach later. Middle Screen says, my fun hypothetical beyond this question is, would you rather have Rick Smith and D'Amico Ryans as your combo, or Nick Caserio and Gary Kubiak as your combo? I will take Nick Caserio and Gary Kubiak on that one. I feel like of those four guys, there's three that you can argue are elite at their jobs. So I will take the combo that has the two elite guys, Nick Caserio and Gary Kubiak. I respect to Rick Smith. He was fine as a GM. Nick Caserio is a better GM than Rick Smith was. I don't know if D'Amico Ryans is necessarily a better head coach than Gary Kubiak, although he's having better success early, and I think his ceiling is higher than Kubiak, and Kubiak's won a Super Bowl, keep in mind. Middle Screen threatened me, said, if you don't choose one, you go back to a flat organizational structure with Bill O'Brien. That's why I'm picking one, Middle Screen, all right? Is this another one from Middle Screen? Now that the Jets are on the board as the first team with a head coaching vacancy this offseason, I want to take the time to ask this question. Which team is the most likely to not care about the lawsuit against the NFL and hire Vikings DC Brian Flores and pair him with the QB linked to him years ago, Browns offseason castoff Deshaun Watson, or is Flores just going to go to Cleveland after Stefanski is fired? I'll put Deshaun aside. I think Deshaun is going to ride this contract out in Cleveland and then not play football anymore. That's my official prediction for Deshaun Watson's future. I don't think any team – Deshaun isn't even playing close to a level where teams even begin to bargain with themselves if he's worth having as a low-paid backup, let alone a high-paid starter. So put Deshaun aside. The team that could hire Brian Flores, it'll say screw you to the NFL, is the one that said screw you to the NFL when the old man was around. The Raiders. That's who. Because I could very much see Antonio Pierce getting fired, for sure. So I think the Raiders are the most likely one because they're the ones that love to boop, middle finger the NFL. We'll see if Mark Davis has that kind of chutzpah. And you know who else is an owner there now who loves to give the finger to the NFL? Tom Brady. So it's Raiders for sure. Plus, Brady's got history with Brian Flores. Man, the more I talk about that, the more I realize that was a really smart fucking answer by me right there. God damn. Middle screen, thank you for the question. All right, we got a few more. Mason from New Braunfels. Howdy, Sean. Howdy, Mason. He says, this is Mason from New Braunfels, an avid Houston Texans watcher. I've not been able to put a grade on Cade Stover's performance this season. What are your thoughts? He doesn't seem to be popping up on the screen at this time. Stover's made a few plays in the passing game. Again, the tight ends have not been a big part of the offense as a whole so far this year. But Stover's made a few plays. He had the 4th-and-1 play, I think, against the Bears. He had another catch and run in a game. I forget which one. I mean, that if I'm sitting here naming his catches one by one, that gives you an idea statistically of what his season has been. I think he's improved as a blocker, especially since that game where inexplicably they put him on the edge against Jonathan Grenard one-on-one. So I would say, I mean, obviously it's incomplete. I mean, he's 6 games into his rookie year. But if I'm holding him to the standard of a 4th-round tight end, I don't know, C+, B-. I mean, he's largely been asked to block. He wasn't great early in the year. He's getting better. And I think Cade Stover's future is bright. That's the most important thing to me is what does the future look like with him? He's being asked to do a lot for a rookie. Brevin Jordan's injury probably didn't do him any favors. He might have less on his plate now if Brevin Jordan hadn't torn his ACL, but he did. And so that's where we are. All right. BK is in the mailbag. He says, we have a QB who loves Jesus and not Instagram assaults. We have multiple receivers who block and aren't divas. We have a defense who legit hits you so hard you can feel it the next day. He said that Hunter strip sack is going to leave a mark. Yeah, let me stop right there. Danielle Hunter has 2 sacks. I think he's got like 2.5, maybe 3 this season. He's got a couple halves. The 2 sacks he's had solo that I can remember this year have been 2 of the most awesome superhero violent sacks I can remember. The one on Caleb Williams where he comes flying in off the edge, and then the one on Drake May, the strip sack fumble, was awesome. He's crawling on the ground to get the ball. I love Danielle Hunter. Back to the question from BK. So while we don't have everything, Nico Collins is out at least another 3 games. We've got a suspended D tackle. Our stud rookie corner is dinged up. We can still have nice things. Given the injuries we've had, mixing in this O-line just make everything better. How did you think the O-line looked as it seemed to work even when Fisher replaced Tunsil at tackle? Was it New England being bad or did we just look good? So I think, let's start with New England's not a bad rushing defense. They were in the top quartile. They were in the bottom quartile of the upper quartile of yards per carry on defense, the Patriots were, going into that game. So they're not a bad run defense. I agree Blake Fisher has looked serviceable and at times good while he's been in there. I think the biggest thing was play to play, they still don't run the ball real well. The only game all year they've run the ball well, like play to play, you know, where they're getting they're staying in reasonable down and distance the entire time was the Colts game, where it felt like Joe Mixon was getting anywhere from 7 to 13 yards every carry. Now, you can't expect that every game. So the 59-yard run and the 54-yard run really skew the numbers a lot. I mean, they had a lot of runs get stuffed. So that's not a recipe long-term. So I would say the blocking is still sketchy running the ball, but at least they're getting explosive plays now, right? And then a lot of that has to do with Mixon being back. So I'm still concerned about the offensive line. BK says, I'm happier than Sean Pendergast when his blood alcohol level is higher than Watson's QB rating. That's all the time now. His QB rating is like a negative number. Great work on the pre and post game shows. Keep Ted Cruz away from NRG. I'll do that. I can control the first one. I will keep doing great work on the pregame and postgame show. Ted Cruz is not my day to watch him, so I don't know where he is. Well, he was doing a debate last night. All right, we got a few more. Charles says, another week, another crappy game by Watson. I'm loving it, by the way. LOL. My question is, from your response last week, do you also believe Watson's decline has to do with his fully guaranteed deal? And I think the meaning of that question, Charles, if I can read into it, is do we think that Deshaun got his money, so he's taking his foot off the gas pedal? I don't think that, actually. Like, I think Deshaun is a legitimately hard worker. I think he's a proud guy. Again, my theory on why he is so bad now is because I think he's in his own head with how disliked he is. I think Deshaun's I think Deshaun has an insatiable desire to be liked by people. And I think the fact that he's a villain now, I don't think he's handling it well. And I think it's manifesting itself in the play on the field for Cleveland this year. So I don't think he's like, well, I got my $46 million, you know, that we're done. He's not like he still moves okay. Like, he's in shape. You can see it. He works out. I just think he may be washed. He's just not good at football anymore. So I don't think it has anything to do with the money. Now, his Instagram account doesn't do him any favors when he posts almost zero about football, but he loves posting 10 picture slideshows on his new Bugatti and things like that, or whatever he's driving these days. I think that's a bad look, especially the shitty you are at football, the less you should be posting about your lifestyle. That's my theory on that. Unless it's like pictures with your parents or your kids or whatever, you know, like good feel good kind of stuff. But the shitty you are a quarterback, the less you should be bragging about your material things, especially in Cleveland of all places. I mean, that's like the least material city on the face of the earth. The fucking lake lit on fire many, many years ago. You know, like from what I've seen in Cleveland, like they all wear mom and dad jeans and heavy coats and Browns hats and dog noses. I mean, that's, you think they're connecting with a quarterback who is posting pictures from Maldives or driving around in a new Bentley? Like, no. All right. Let's see. Harry is up next. What are the percentages we could sign Diggs for next season? I actually asked that question of Nick Caserio today, and he left the door open for it, is the best I could do. That they're going to talk about it, and, you know, if it's good for both sides. It was the answer I expected, but I wanted to ask it. You know what I mean? Sometimes you ask a question hoping you get one extreme answer or the other, knowing that there's a 95% chance you're going to get something in the middle. So I got something in the middle from Nick. Now, the good news is he didn't say no, or boy, we're going to be capped out or anything like that. Now you're asking me what percentage I think. I'm just bragging that I asked Nick Caserio about it today. Sorry about that, Harry. Percentage we signed Diggs, higher than it was at the beginning of the year. I would say 40%. No, 35%. 35% feels about right. Like a 1 in 3 shot. That he comes back. Now, he may really like it here. I don't think Stephon is getting $30 million from anybody. That's the thing. Like, that would be the interesting thing, is what is his market out there? So we'll see. Chris in the ATL, excited to see Autry in action in this defense, but bummed that Mario Edwards is now out. Makes two of us. Who is easier for you to defend, a player who gets busted for PEDs or a player who gets dinged for PIDs? He calls them performance incompetent drugs. In other words, things that hinder your performance. Yeah, to be clear, Mario Edwards did not get suspended for performance-enhancing drugs like the Nico Autry, you know, steroids and things like that. He got dinged for what are usually recreational drugs. Now, I will say this. Nick Caserio was on with John Harris and Mark Vandermeer, and they asked him about the Mario Edwards suspension. And Nick stopped himself short of seemingly pointing a finger at somebody, and it felt like it wasn't at Mario. It felt like it was more a league thing. So who knows? I mean, maybe Mario Edwards took some cough syrup and got busted for that. Who knows? So Nick seemed on their interview, not the interview he did with me and Seth, but on the interview he did in-house, he seemed to be upset about that suspension on behalf of the player. Now, who's easier to defend? I would say the PED guy. At least the PED guy is trying to get better at football. The PID guy is getting worse, smoking weed or snorting coke or whatever you're doing. So at least PED guy has got the hustle going on. And oftentimes PED guy, at least they say this, did it accidentally. And I choose to believe it every single time. I'm a sucker. Chris in the ATL also asks, what is your go-to food or snack when you're on PIDs? It's a safe space, Sean. You can tell us. It's my podcast. I know it's a safe space, Chris. I love Chris. My favorite, let me just be very clear. I don't do a lot of PIDs. I drink for sure. Maybe more than I should. I drink probably the appropriate amount. I have a drink like 4 days a week. And like one of those days I really cut loose. You know what I mean? So I have like one day where I get a little sideways. The other days it's a glass of wine, maybe sipping a drink over at Lizards, but I'm not getting you know, I'm not getting bombed, that kind of thing. The only PIDs that I do right now is I do the occasional edible. Bought a bunch of edibles when Amy and I were driving through Colorado. They help me sleep. I will say that. Like, I get really good sleep. I get super good sleep when I pop like a half of a gummy. So that's really good. But my favorite food or snack, I'm a salty snack guy, man. And this isn't even when I'm on PIDs, man. If I got any inkling of hunger, I am a carb and salty snack guy. That's what I am. And it's a vice. It's bad. I can eat a whole bag of Ruffles. And I'm not talking about the little bags you get like at a movie theater or a football game. I'm talking about the family size bag. I can eat a whole bag of those. I love salty snacks for sure. Love me some nachos. All right, couple more. Yes, by my count, couple more. Yeah. Justin, I think this may be a different Justin. I'm not sure. Justin, if it's a different one, then welcome in. If not, Justin, good on you getting in one more time. With the Bills and Jets making big trades this week, do you think the Texans will make any moves before the trade deadline? Do you think it would be wise to reinforce any weak spots? If you could make any trade happen for the Texans, what would it be? It was funny on the interview with Nick Caserio today. Seth demanded that Nick make a trade for a defensive back on behalf of the people. Seth put it out to the people on Twitter what what they would want in a trade. So Seth, being the hero that he is, demanded Nick make a trade for a DB, and Nick didn't say no. I do think the Texans will make a move. Well, they traded Cam Akers, but they were on the getting draft pick end of that trade. As far as like trading draft picks for players, like making moves, like being a buyer, we'll call it, like that's what they say in baseball, like being a buyer at the trade deadline. I could definitely see them making a trade or two. I think it's more on the defensive side of the ball that they would look to. The secondary for sure. The linebacking crew for sure. These injuries they've got in the secondary and linebacker are really highlighting something that I was kind of trying to ignore, but something you notice when you put together hypothetical 53-man rosters in the preseason, which is, a few of these guys go out, they are really, really out over their skis at cornerback and linebacker. And let me be clear, this past game, I thought Neville Hewitt did a nice job when he came in place of Azeez Al-Shaair. I thought D'Angelo Ross did fine. As the corner replacing Kamari Lassiter, it's the New England Patriots. They're facing the Green Bay Packers this weekend. So, yeah, they would be on the defensive side of the ball. I don't have any specific trades. I haven't even thought, Justin, yet about guys to target. I'll say this. I mean, I would start looking at the teams that are shipping guys out. Raiders shipping out Davante Adams. Cleveland shipping out Amari Cooper. Start looking at those teams as potential, you know, tents at the flea market, so to speak. If they're willing to move on from guys like that, then they're probably in much more of a rebuild mode than they're much more in seller mode than they are buyer mode. All right, Ryan and the Shug, you're finishing us up, dude. Do you think this is the first week that the Texans quote, the Texans feel good about that game coming out of Foxborough? Is that the first time that's been uttered on air in 610 history? By me, yes. I mean, how the hell could you be happy? Let me back up, though. I will say this. He says he's paraphrasing me from Payne and Pendergast yesterday. That made me pause. Ha ha. Is this the first week that the phrase, the Texans feel good about that game coming out of Foxborough, has been uttered on air in 610 history? Now, keep in mind, this is the first game the Texans won in Foxborough in the history of their team. In the history of the universe, the Texans had been 0-7 in Foxborough, losing by an average of 18 points. So in my head, I'm going back through the games, and I'm going to say no. I'm going to say this was the second time that it's happened. I would be willing to bet that coming out of that game in 2017, Deshaun Watson's rookie year, if you recall, that was the Hurricane Harvey year. So the Texans got destroyed by the Jags in the opener because the team had largely been driving around bringing supplies to people for a couple of weeks. In addition to practicing football and trying to get their power back. So they lose to Jacksonville. Then Deshaun becomes the starter in week two. They beat the Bengals in kind of an ugly Thursday night game. And so I think the expectation going to New England in week three was that, okay, well, the Texans are going to get killed. There was Deshaun, it's fine beating Cincinnati with one play, basically. They won 13-9. It's another thing to beat Tom Brady up in New England. And as a result, the Texans, I think, were two touchdown underdogs in that game, and they probably should have won the game. If Bill O'Brien had any cojones, they would have won that football game. But the big thing coming out of that game was Deshaun Watson looked amazing. He looked incredible. If I'm not mistaken, he had over 300 yards passing in that game. He looked really good. Again, should have won the game. If he had a coach with a set of cajones, he would have won that football game. So I would venture to say, if I had to go back and listen, as I pull chocolate off of my keyboard, boy, I got to be careful with this Halloween candy. I would venture to say that I don't want to call it a moral victory, but that was the second game of Deshaun Watson's, second start of Deshaun Watson's career. And he tore up a Bill Belichick defense and almost won in New England as a 2-touchdown underdog. I would be willing to say that if I were to go back and find the audio in our archives, that we were probably pretty happy with that game coming out of Foxborough. Not happy with the loss, obviously. Probably angry with Bill O'Brien over some of the decisions that were made towards the end of that game. He got very conservative in that game. And instead of going forward on short yardage situations, kicked a field goal. And if I recall, that allowed Tom Brady to come back down and score the game-winning touchdown, I think to Brandon Cooks, if I'm remembering that correctly. So I was probably happy with that one just based on the feeling that, okay, we got a quarterback. You know what I mean? Like sometimes it's about the bigger picture and the big picture coming out of that game. And then the very next game, Deshaun puts up 57 points against the Titans. He goes on to win a couple more games after that. They lose to the Chiefs in week 5, but he had huge numbers in that game. Deshaun was wildly, wildly productive as a rookie. We forget that. That's what makes it so jarring to look at this version of Deshaun that we're getting, because he was the shit his rookie year, man. He was awesome. So, man, that was a good question, Ryan. That was a fun trip down memory lane. And by the way, I'm glad CJ Stroud is our quarterback now. Ryan also asked, what players are circling around the circle of swarm? Not in this week or even next week, but trending in the right direction. He says, I'm biased, but Damian Pierce's resilience after struggles last year and early injury are really encouraging. Feel like if he does this another week or two, y'all would put him in there. What do you think? Curious to hear you gatekeep the circle of swarm. For those who don't know, Seth and I do something on Fridays called the Circle of Swarm, where he and I each pick three people who are the swarmiest Houston Texans going into the game this coming weekend. And swarmiest is a very, very broad, nebulous adjective that really doesn't exist other than on Payne and Pendergast. But for me, at least, for the three I pick, it's a combination. It's almost like 50% the full year, 40% the most recent week, and then 10% how I feel their swarminess is going to carry over against the future opponent. So it's almost like a power ranking of swarm is what it becomes. So that's kind of how I do it. Now, Seth may have his own methodology, which is probably far less percentage and mathematically driven than mine. Where is Damian on that? I would consider Damian just maybe not this week, but yeah, if he has the exact same game Sunday and say the following Sunday that he did against New England, it's going to be hard to keep him out of there. And he runs with a swarmy demeanor too. Much more so than he did last year. I feel like the swarmy, contact-loving Damian Pierce is back, and that's a good thing. As far as the player swirling, you have to tune into Payne and Pendergast for that one. I can't give up everything in the mailbag, Ryan and the Shug, but I appreciate you. Always listening, always good content, he says. Thank you, my friend. And now I feel bad for not giving you my people circling, but if I'm giving you the people circling around the circle of swarm, then I'm almost kind of giving up what it may look like on Friday for me, and I don't want to do that. All right, that's it. That was right where I wanted it. A nice 45-minute mailbag episode. Again, a reminder, HOUmailbag@gmail.com. If you want to send in some questions, best time to send them in is after the game on Sunday. If you're asking about Green Bay, the ship has sailed. I am not going to, obviously, the next mailbag isn't until next Tuesday. So any questions that you're going to send about the Green Bay game from the time you're listening to this till Sunday, they're not going to get answered. I don't look at the mailbag till after the game on Sunday. So if you got some broader questions about, especially the trade deadline coming up in a couple of weeks that you want to send away. Send those now. Those evergreen just fine. Any games about, obviously, the game against Green Bay coming up, shoot them to me right after the game Sunday and Monday, and we'll start stacking them, man. Mailbag's getting fuller and fuller every week, and I love it. All right, big thanks to Anthony Irwin for getting you guys this podcast. Big thanks to you guys for subscribing, rating, and reviewing, and mostly listening and sharing with your friends. I appreciate that. So until Friday morning, you'll have a preview of the Green Bay Packer game with a full-on six-pack and a whole lot of fun. coming up on Friday. And then, of course, we'll get you an episode. I'll record Sunday night following the post-game show and give you my thoughts on what is hopefully a win over the Green Bay Packers this weekend. So, until then, till Friday, have a great week, everybody. Appreciate you tuning in to the Utopia Football Podcast.